Are we breathing? Did you hear anything Phyllis just said? Yeah? Okay. Okay, so I'm going to do my best to watch the time. And Simone, can I ask that you really cut me off when it's 10 till? Okay, thank you. Just in case I don't. Okay, thanks. All right, so if you've been to one of these services before, you know that I just try to do this rapid fire. And if this is your first time, put your seatbelt on, and I'm going to try my best. Okay. What factors go into selecting your stole each week? I do have about 5 or 6 stoles. This is a stole. It is the mark of ordination. It is supposed to represent the weight on your shoulders of the position of ministry. And each stole that I have received, it's been a present, a gift given to me. And this one, of course, was given to me by you all on the moment of my installation. So when I feel like I am speaking specifically to you all or about us or that I just feel especially in love with you that day, you will see this one. There are others that are bright. I will pull on because we are having a joyous service or because we are having a very hard one, and I want something to balance out what it is that we're doing. And so you get the idea. And then, of course, I have a few favorites. One has a tree that, or a branch at least, with blossoms that go around, and you'll typically see me wearing that for rites of passage for obvious, I think, reasons. But it's intentional. It is intentional. What topic do you find most difficult to address from the pulpit and why? So I think one of my hardest learnings in the last 4 years specifically here was after the Pulse massacre, right, everybody remembers when there were 50-something gay, mostly men, killed in the nightclub in Orlando. And it took me a long time to be able to respond to that in any sort of public way. And it was only because a handful of you actually said, like, we need to hear from our minister right now. And that was tremendously gut-wrenching because I was in mourning and in my own puddle of sitting literally under my desk in my office, just in despair. And I didn't have words for myself, let alone for you all, but I had to learn in that moment that that wasn't an excuse as a minister. So anything from the prayer that you just heard to anything that I am also grieving is the hardest thing to talk about. And often enough I can build up enough of a distance from something to call on what you need from me, but it's oftentimes a challenge in moments such as this. Do you think the UUA as a movement or religion is in good health? What can we do to ensure this? Yes, and? I guess the question is, has it ever been in good health? Has any religious tradition or organization ever been in good health? I think that it is in a space of being responsible and accountable to itself, and that is causing a lot of areas of anxiety, and anxiety causes dishealth. And then I think it's also creating a lot of possibility and new energy and new voice, which is the creation of health in a way that we haven't seen before. So if nothing else, it's a very alive time, which is what the world calls for any religious tradition to be. My concern about the UUA right now, which would be true of any tradition or institution, is that the more inward focused we become and worrying about our own fights, the less we can actually do to serve the world. So we need to get right with ourselves before we can do what we can for others, but as folks are headed out for a General Assembly and ministry days right now, they're on planes. Robin is on her way right now, which is why she's not here. Facebook is filled with colleagues, unfortunately, saying, you know, before we get there, let me tell you something that's been irking me. And then, you know, it just feels like, is this what we need to be doing? Or can we really dive deep in addressing the fact that babies are in cages? Right? So that's every day and every hour and every topic that we're talking about, I would answer this question differently. What we can do to ensure it is to be the model of health and to own that we are Unitarian Universalists and that we will be regardless of what the denomination is doing, and that we can decide who and how the larger we will be represented in our own actions. When you look back at the years here at UUCWC, how were your expectations different from what has actually happened? Oh, my friends. How did that one not get sifted out? Yeah, I've talked a lot to Joe Schenck about this, unless this is your question, who was the chair of my search committee. My supervising minister, my colleague at Summit, Vanessa Southern, when she started at Summit 17 years ago, she's no longer there, but when she started, 17 years ago, it was the Sunday of September 11th. And she marks that, and her fellow colleagues who began their ministry on that Sunday, how could you ever know what your ministry was going to be based on, all these search conversations and interviews, and you have a plan, and then that happens, the world changes. Ferguson happened the Sunday that I started, or the Sunday before or after, and the world has changed, or the white world has woken up to what has been happening in the world, and therefore the world is having different conversations. I am in my ministry. So I know I had very pretty, lovely things imagined for our time together, and we've had those, but of course our work has been different. I think I'm more grateful for this work over the last 4 years than I could have ever imagined. Coming into the pulpit that Charles Stevens held, I really just thought that this was going to be roses and ponies because, he makes everything lovely. So I think it cannot be understated that the world has changed or we are understanding the world and addressing the world in a different way in the last 4 years than ever before. How do we not hate the people and groups and organizations who work to hurt others, our society, and our planet? So I don't know the answer to that, except that I don't think it's helpful, and I don't think that it is nuanced, and I think that when we just decide that we're done with or can hate or remove or characterize a whole set of people, the possibility of what I would call, we minimize the possibility of life and change and our tradition is called a living tradition. We are grounded in the idea that things move and evolve and grow, not because it happens, but because we make it so. So the second that we decide that's not a worthy effort with other people, and that we also won't be changed in that relationship with those people that we, or organizations, et cetera, that we hate, we have just decided that our whole life, this tiny little life on this gargantuan planet, this one opportunity, in my mind, to participate in this life, we've just removed a whole subset of what we believe is possible. And then we're just done, right? Then that, I don't know, that's a poor answer, I guess, but it feels way too easy and limited. And I want my life to be as big and expansive as possible, even the painful stuff. And I say that not being naive to pain. So if that's your retort right now, please know that. What inspires you? What is your favorite blessing or prayer? What comforts you in times of trouble? You put 3 on this card, whoever you are. That's cheating. What inspires me? you all inspire me. And I mean that. I think that I am tremendously lucky to be serving a congregation, to be in a choiceful community where I get to see people striving to be their best selves, doing incredible things, whether that is like showing up for a meeting where you don't really like the other person at that meeting and then deciding that you're friends at the end of it, or at least seeing the worth in the other person. Like, that's big, let alone serving populations of people who are in need time and time and time again, 26 years of home front ministry, and like just on and on, the incredible work that happens here. I am so lucky to have to hear the news, have to face the world, and then get to come into here and see that there is a different world possible. That's what inspires me. Same answer to all three of those. How different was it having an intern this past year, or how different is it having two little boys from having one? Okay. Having an intern this year was tremendously different than I anticipated, because I had a person in my mind. I had me as an expectation of who was going to walk in those doors. And I forgot that Sue was going to show up as Sue. And Hannah Gallo, who will be joining us in August, who you will hear more about soon, not today, but soon, I will now know that Hannah is also not me, nor will she be Sue. And so it was different challenges that I anticipated, and different joys than I anticipated, and an excellent learning, or reminder at least, in discovery of who is in the ministry right now, and all of the ways that I can teach, and that you all can be a teaching congregation. Because what I have learned from you will be different from what the interns learn from you, and what I needed to learn as in from what each intern will need to learn from me, and so on and so forth. Having two children different from one is that everything is different. Everything is different, but it's also more wonderful, and we can take this out of the podcast. This doesn't have to be recorded. Tobias is on day 4 of potty training, and he peed on the potty in the church. So, dear God, please let only one set of diapers be in our space still. Okay. How do you balance family life, personal life, spiritual life, and work life? Ha! I don't balance them. I don't balance them, right? This is the sermon that I gave on the myth of balance. Sometimes you all get all of my attention. Sometimes my family gets all of my attention. Sometimes my spiritual life gets all of my attention. Most times, none of those things get a fair amount of my attention. But every day, I at least try to set a new goal that is closer toward my expectations and health and needs. And you know, I have accountability partners. You all, my wife, my children, my psyche, my stomach. when things are out of balance, we all know it. And that is helpful. I probably have time for one or two more. So I answered this already, but I'll say it again. What is the one theological position that differentiates Unitarian Universalists from other religions? And I would go back to that, the notion that we are a living tradition. We are not canonized. We are always looking for more inspiration, more deeper understanding, for growth. Our best selves show up when we are expecting to change. And that doesn't mean that we aren't looking to things that are from ancient histories or traditions, but that we can look at all, we can look at this moment and our histories with a lens of how will that move us into the next day and into the next era for justice, for growth, for peace, etc. There's not just one, right? It's that we believe in an inherent goodness, not sin, not brokenness, not a need to be saved, but rather like you are born good enough, worthy and whole. And over time, that may erode because of the world in which we live in, but you can always be called back to that because that is still essentially a part of who you are. I want to hear the voice of God, but the pods are not good. Does that mean the pods? What does that mean? The pods are not good. I want to hear the voice of God too. I believe she will sound beautiful when we hear her. Okay, let me see if I can answer one more. I don't know what this says when we read it aloud. How do we keep the faith in times of struggle? I guess my question to you would be, what is your faith? My faith is that love wins, that there is strength in goodness, kindness. I believe that there's power and strength in anger and rage when it's used in a way that will and can move mountains, that demands attention on rightness. How do I keep my faith? I show up in places where I see it happening or where we can create it and invite others into it. I almost canceled church today because in Elizabeth, New Jersey, at 9 o'clock today, outside of the ICE detention center, there's this huge multi-faith, multi-racial rally against the detention center. And I thought, right, that's actually where we're supposed to be. Nobody needs to hear me talk about what I'm doing in my life. So that's how I keep my faith, is to be surrounded by people who know that there's a different world possible and who are actually the ones making it so. And I cry a lot. And then I take a nap. And then I spend time with children or animals, or dirt, right? Things that bring us back to something simpler and fills your heart with a different kind of wholeness. That's all I have time for. Was that okay? Thank you.